This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our numero dos of the Rob Brown Show rolls on. This is the Fan Upstate. Howdy, y'all. Rob Brown, the great one. Lonzo hath returned to us. Going to have a lot of college football talk on the show today. Not exclusively, though, because it is the final week of the regular season of the National Football League. I went last night. I was hosting BetMGM tonight on the BetQL Network last night. Some of you may have heard as it airs right here on this lovely radio station and fine Odyssey stations around these great United States. And we talked about it. I went and pulled up all the playoff scenarios. There are effectively two divisions in seeding being played for in the NFC, one division and some seeds ultimately being played. So, excuse me, two divisions and some seeds being played for in the AFC. There's really only a handful of teams for whom the Week 18 has great importance. Over in the AFC, you've got the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Miami Dolphins, and I think that's really it as far as who's going to get in. Everybody else knows that they are in, so it's seeding. Over in the NFC, you have effectively the NFC South that has to be determined, and the, what's the other division you got? Oh, the NFC North, that's got to be decided, obviously, with the Vikings and the Lions playing not just for the division crown, but also playing for the number one seed and the first round bye. So we're going to get into all of that coming up later on in the show, and obviously tomorrow as well as we head into the football weekend. I really should say the NFL weekend, because the college football weekends are concluded for this season. We have effectively a couple of smaller bowl games left to play, and we have got the semifinals in the Natty left ahead of us outside of the Sugar Bowl coming up at 4 p.m. this afternoon. So we'll get some football coming up here later on in the radio broadcast, NFL and college, as we head down the line. But my dear friends, it is 7:02 in the morning. You are 57 minutes on the dot right now away from having to clock in and lock in at the office. For many of you, your first day back at work in 2025. And don't you want to go in there and show that you are heading into 2025 the most informed, enlightened, and educated sports fan in your office? Of course you do. And if you do, that's why you are here at 7 a.m. every weekday when the Rob Brown Show does this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office this lovely January 2nd of, yes, it is true, my dear friends, 2025. We are a quarter of the way done with the 2000s. Not really. The 2000, then we go into 21, but you know how years work.
2020s.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's no 25. No, it is a quarter.
Yeah, quarter of the way done with the. Yeah,
chances are none of us will see, you know, the next.
Hey, thing, I'm not giving up, baby. Science, okay. Science is pushing onwards, ever upwards. All right. Maybe, man. Although last night, I'll tell you what I had to do last night while I was on the air. I came to the realization, though, that I had a hair growing out of my, not my earlobe, but like this little the little middle part right there. I had a hair growing out of it.
Yeah,
like not a short one either, not like a little stubble thing, like a whole ass. I was able to get it out by grabbing it and pulling on it.
No, you don't want to do that.
Why?
Because you might pull out your ear.
lose a groin while you're at it. All right, let's get to it. Let's start item number one. There it is. We'll get back in the groove. Lonzo and I haven't worked together in 3 months. What do you want?
Let's get to it. I mean, you know.
I was going
to
say item number one.
Well, you're just completely off. So, I mean, it's not me. I mean, I'm on it.
You have been completely off. No, I've been here.
No. I mean, for someone coming off vacation, man, I've been killing it since I've been back.
We talked a little bit about it in the last segment. No need to necessarily go on and on about it. But after the terror attack, I don't care if they label it as officially that or not. It is, it was, and it shall forever be labeled a terrorist attack that took place on New Year's Eve on Bourbon Street. The Sugar Bowl delayed, was expected to go down at 8:45 last evening. Instead, the game between Notre Dame and Georgia will take place today at 4 p.m. The Superdome was already locked out to do a full security sweep, and that's relatively standard operating procedure yesterday. And obviously, this attack on the people on Bourbon Street heightened that. That game has been moved to 4 p.m. today, with the winner punching their ticket to the January 9th Orange Bowl against Penn State in a college football championship semifinal. CEO Jeff Hundley, Sugar Bowl CEO Jeff Hundley, said in a media briefing yesterday that, quote, public safety is paramount. All parties all agree that it is in the best interest of everybody and public safety that we postpone the game. We are grateful to the leadership of the Sugar Bowl, New Orleans, the state of Louisiana, and federal authorities as we work together to ensure we can provide a safe environment for everyone. Governor Landry of Louisiana added that he will attend the Sugar Bowl and is confident the area around the stadium will be safe. There will obviously be extra law enforcement authorities on hand at the Caesars Superdome this evening to make sure that there are no repeat attacks or other incidents that would endanger the public. We will talk a little bit about the impact of the decision to postpone the game on the game itself a little bit later in the show. But we do have our final round two game this afternoon, 4 p.m., Georgia versus Notre Dame down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Let's go to item number two. Item number two, a continuation of item number one. It is now official. Three of the four third round spots, semifinal spots, have been claimed. We started it with a 31-14 Penn State victory over Boise State, a game that was, I don't know, Zoe, I think it was a better game than the final score indicates. Penn State got that touchdown in the fourth quarter that kind of separated these two teams. It was a relatively good game, but Penn State did exactly what I told you they were going to do. They were going to go all in on removing Ashton Janty from this game and say, if you're going to win it, Maddox Madsen, the quarterback for Boise State, is going to have to win it. 23 of 35, 304, one touchdown, but he was picked off three times. And that's the game. Janty did have 104 yards rushing, but it took him 30 carries to get to that mark. Averaged just 3.5 yards per carry. And a big reason was he had one good 26-yard run. And outside of that, Ashton Janty, the Heisman Trophy runner-up, was largely negated. On the flip side, Catron Allen, running back for Penn State, 134 ground yards, two touchdowns through the air, caught by Tyler Warren, six grabs for 63. Drew Aller did exactly what I said he needed to do. Be good enough. Throw for around 52%.
Not impressed by Janty at all. And Scataboo, definitely. I know you're going to get to that. Definitely impressed by him, Janty. I'm not. The fact that Penn State kept waiting for them, because they don't usually win big games, to do something to lose it, and they did not. They were steady the entire time and went in and did what they had to do. But, you know, a lot of these West Coast guys, I want to see what they can do when they play better defenses and at an earlier time.
I have, and we can bring this up. We will talk about this later on in the show. I'm going to tell you right now, Spencer Danielson failed Ashton Janty in this game. I genuinely put him to blame on this. The offensive play calling in this game was hot garbage. Here's my question. If Penn State has told you and shown you that they are selling out on stopping Ashton Janty in the run game, and they were. If you go back and watch that game, every time Janty got the football, there was a mid-level defender, a linebacker, or a walked-up safety or defensive back. Every time Janty touched the football, Penn State had a gunner coming right at his head. Every single snap that Janty was in the backfield, if he touched the football, there was an extra dude from Penn State that just went turbo to get to him and slow him up.
Doesn't it make you wonder if other defenses tried that throughout the year and they just were incapable of it because they weren't on the same skill level?
I don't know is the answer, because he put up 190 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Oregon Ducks. Now, granted, it was in week 2, and Oregon in week 2 was a different looking team than they were in week 10. I'm not going to disagree with that, but he smoked the Oregon Ducks and everybody else. Listen, I didn't think for a second, just so we're clear, and I said this on Tuesday's show, I said very clearly, I don't think Ashton Janty's getting a 190 and 3 touchdowns like he does in a lot of other games. This is the best defense that he has played, and I may include the Oregon Ducks in that discussion. I don't think he's going for a 190 and 3 touchdowns in this game like we're used to. I do think he can get to probably a 125, a 130, and a touchdown or two. But here's the problem. When Penn State shows you that they're bringing a dude at the head of number 2 every time he touches the football, you got to get him the ball in other ways. You got to get him in other spots. You got to get him on screens. You got to get him on play action. You have got to do something else. And it's like, for whatever reason, Boise State was just like, look, we're either going to throw the ball with Madsen, a traditional passing offense, or we're going to run Janty right into the teeth of this defense. Madcraft popped in and he said, Rob, I was screaming at my TV to throw a halfback screen to Janty just once. Same. I'm like, get him on the wings. What are we doing here? Like, it was an absolute failure of the Boise State coaching staff.
Because this is the first time I actually watched him play. Can he catch?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And they didn't throw him the ball. He had 3 catches for 22 yards. And the best part was all of those catches were just straight design catches. Like, you have to work your offense. You have to scheme this guy open. If you can scheme him into some one-on-one spots, if you can scheme him open, then you take advantage of an incredible skill set that he has. But it's like everything was, hey, guys, we're giving the ball to 2. And Penn State said, cool, we're sending an extra dude at 2. You got to beat us somewhere else. And when they tried to go through the air, there were some spots where Madsen was dropping darts on Penn State, and then they just went, yeah, we're not going to do it. I don't understand it. I got to tell you, Boise State's head coach Spencer Danielson was not ready for the big time. Just was not ready. I mean, look, he was up against a better team. There's no doubt about it. But they didn't do themselves any favors. Also on into the second round are the Texas Longhorns, a 39-31 double overtime win over a very scrappy Arizona State Sun Devil team. Quinn Ewers, 20 of 30 for 322, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Sam Levitt from Arizona State, 24 of 46 for 222. Here's the fun part. Texas ran for 53 yards. Do you remember how many they ran for against Clemson? 292. They ran for 53 against Arizona State.
That sort of thing will get your defensive coordinator fired.
Yeah, real quick. We might be talking about that coming up later in the show. Arizona State ran the ball for 214 yards in this game. The problem was they got to a point where they were playing from behind right out of the gate. It was 14-3 at the end of the first quarter. And at that point, Arizona State had to change the game plan, had to stop. Even though Cam Scataboo had 30 carries for a 143 and 2 touchdowns, they got to a point where Sam Levitt was running for his life in the passing game, but they had to keep going to the air anyway, and it just did not work out. I'm going to say, Zo, this might be recency bias, and we'll have to evaluate it, but I'm not going to say it was one of the best games we have seen since Texas-USC back in the day.
Oh, agreed. It was a very good, and I just want to say, for all the people who don't like this playoff, it's been successful because there are a couple of teams, even though they didn't win against Texas, they wouldn't have been in there. Ohio State would not have been playing in the four-team scenario. So there are a lot of Penn State would not have been playing in the four. So we're getting to see that it's being successful. Yep. Now, in the end, you may end up with one of the Blue Bloods winning anyway, but still, I mean, I think this definitely has been successful.
The playoff was not about preventing a blue blood from winning. It was about giving everybody else a chance.
Right.
And here's two teams that we have just talked about that would not have had a chance in the 14 playoff that did. Arizona State had a chance to win that game. That was the setup. Give teams like Arizona State a chance. They had a chance. They missed because Texas is a good football team, but they had a chance. Speaking of good football teams, the Ohio State Buckeyes might be the best team in America right now, based on what they've done in the first two rounds of the college football playoff, because all of a sudden, Will Howard has started on the Hey America U Tour. 319 yards, three touchdowns through the air. Trevion Henderson, 8 carries for 94 yards. Quinshon Judkins, 17 for 85. Henderson found the end zone twice on the ground. Jeremiah, who in the hell is Jeremiah Smith? Just the guy who put up a buck 87 and a pair of tutties. Hey, Ducks, I'm not a big football guy. All right? I've been watching the game a year or two. Not a big football guy, but if a dude ends the first half with 160 yards and a tutty against you, you may want to stop him. You may want to try something. There was a spot in this game, Lonzo. Third quarter. Oregon comes out. They score a touchdown. They've got this to a two-score game. Duck go on defense. Duck get Buck backed all the way up into the back. It is third and 19. This is a three and out. If the Ducks get a three and out, get Ohio State to turn the ball over, and they go punch it in the end zone again, we're looking at a very different ball game. We're looking at a game that we're going, uh-oh, maybe the Ohio State Buckeyes are about to get Texas. Maybe the Arizona State Sun Devils of the Big Ten, the Oregon Ducks, are about to slam the door back open, try to wide. And what happens? Third and 19 on what would have been a three and out, and what happens? Jeremiah Smith is somehow wide ass open, unguarded, and Will Howard's just like, oh, word? Puts a little dart right on the sideline. Jeremiah Smith gets it, toe taps on the sideline, goes out of bounds, first and 10. What do the the Ohio State Buckeyes do? Take it 85 yards down the field, punch it into the end zone, match the Ducks touchdown, and kill off the entire third quarter. The whole third quarter became worthless to the Ducks. If they cover up number four, the best guy on the team, at least in this game, take him out of that play and get a stop on third and 19, they turn around and they go score a touchdown after that, guess what happens? We got a completely different ball game on our hands. Completely different vibe.
All right, I'll disagree, but that's fine. I mean, if you take him out of the game, you still got Ibuka, you got some other guys.
I don't disagree.
I mean, they consistently bring in the next guy receiver-wise that's going to the NFL.
That is absolutely the Ohio State stance to take. I don't disagree with you. But at that point in the game, nobody had done anything but Jeremiah Smith through the year.
Momentum had switched at the end of the second quarter going into halftime,
yep.
And they came out in the third quarter and they got it again. It's like, okay,
yep.
I kept telling my wife.
Tell me you didn't tense up just a little bit.
Well,
when they scored that touchdown to open the third quarter, you didn't tense up a little bit?
I'm a little bit different because I'm a Kansas City fan.
He said, I'm built different.
Yeah, I'm a Kansas City fan.
I'm built different.
It's just like, I just kept saying, this game ain't over yet. Until that point, when they drove down the score, I was like, okay, we're good now.
If that third and 19 isn't converted, Ohio State punts and Oregon scores, I think you got some coal turning into diamonds, if you get my drift on that one. I think you got some tight orifices. I was trying to figure out what's the most radio-friendly way to say you're clenched up tight, and that's what I came up with. I'm real good at radio, y'all. All right. So there you go. Your three of your four spots are settled. Texas and Ohio State will play in the Cotton Bowl down in Texas. Little home field advantage for the Longhorns
still,
here.
Shout out to the scheduling people for putting that on a Friday. Thank you.
And then, of course, the day before that. Although this might, I wonder if they flip these games around. Do they push the Orange Bowl back a day to reflect on the Sugar Bowl champion having to play a day later? Do they push that back a day?
They've already put it on schedule. Don't do that.
January 9th, 7:30 p.m., the Penn State Nittany Lions. That is a Thursday night, by the way. Not a big fan of that. What the hell are we doing?
Right. That's why. Ugh. I'm glad Ohio State's on Friday. That's why I'm good with that.
Penn State versus the winner of Notre Dame, Georgia on the 9th. Texas and Ohio State on Friday night, the 10th. Of January, and then we will wait 10 days to declare a national champion on January 20th, which is, of course, as all common sense says it should be, on a Monday night. Come on, college football. I approve of the playoff expansion. I approve of everything you've done so far. Why are we playing the Natty on a Monday? Why are we playing the Natty on a Monday? Do better.
Because there'll be NFL playoffs on the weekend, right?
Do it on Saturday!
Yeah, there'll be an NFL playoff game on Saturday, right?
By the way, the Nielsen ratings are out for the two college playoff games versus the NFL games. NFL handed college football its ass in the ratings.
Of course they did.
Like, not shocking, but surprising. The two playoff games up against an NFL game average like 6.4 million viewers. The two college playoff games not against an NFL game average like 14 million. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people, man. All right, take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss a little bit more college football. We've got to get into the NFL and more. Rob Brown, the great Lonzo, the Rob Brown Show rolls on us. The Fan Upstate. Join our live stream, facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, or the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. We stream all 4 hours of the show live every day that we are doing a show, and this is true. We are doing a show right now, so we are streaming live. Facebook.com/fanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Get liked up and subscribed up and join us every morning. We are trying to take our streaming community to new heights in 2025.
You know, starting next week for like 3 weeks, we're going to like do 5 shows a week.
Ugh.
I know.
Dude.
Well, in our case, like 6 shows a week. And
yeah.
And in your case, even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I've already been told that once the football season is over, the BetQL network has like a swell of hosts that are taking their vacations once football concludes. And the VP, who is has become a buddy of mine since I started working for BetQL, the VP the other way is like, look, dude, when the boys start taking vacations, you're going to get called on a lot, like end of January, early February, into March. You're going to get called on a lot, which is great. Except for they call me predominantly to ask me to do the show that ends at 11 p.m. And if you've listened to me, you know it's high octane radio when Rob Brown does the show, and so you end up in a spot where I'm like, I'm not ready to go to bed until I went to bed at like 12:30, 1 o'clock this morning to then get up at 3:45 to come in here and do this show. There's gonna be some fights. There's gonna be some struggles. Y'all go ahead. When you hear me start popping up once or twice a week from 7 to 11 p.m., go ahead and invest in Monster, because I haven't had an energy drink in like a couple of weeks now. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to get healthier, and B, kidney stones. Trying to avoid those because you know I turned 40 in like 2 months. And that is what I've been told happens a lot.
So you don't have any?
No.
All right, all right.
No. I don't yet, but I also have been told those don't help you in preventing them. But when I get to the point that I'm doing both shows, yeah, I'm going to, like a lot. Like a lot, like a lot. Like a lot, a lot. So let's get to some football here, shall we? We've got the Sugar Bowl coming up tonight. What's your lean on this game, Lonzo? Because I said earlier in the show, this is a narrative game that I'm really intrigued in. It is a narrative game in that for a lot of years, Notre Dame has been a team that has consistently convinced us that they're ready, gotten onto the big stage, and been clearly not ready. On the flip side, this Georgia team is a team that over the past handful of years under Kirby Smart has convincingly told us they are ready and then been ready. But you have got a couple of different things. Number one, you got Marcus Freeman, who is like opposite of Brian Kelly in every single way, right? Like Marcus Freeman is an authentic dude. Brian Kelly is a poser. Marcus Freeman is a dude that is 100% like the supportive coach that you want to play for. Brian Kelly's the dude that has regularly been caught telling his kids how much they suck on the sideline, Marcus Freeman is young, hip, cool. Brian Kelly is like that old coach who just won't get out of his stubborn ways and refuses to change. I got a quarterback finally at Notre Dame in Riley Leonard. That is the guy that I need him to be, right? A guy that can move with his legs, but doesn't unless he absolutely has to. I've got a Notre Dame defense that, even though there have been some good defenders that have come through Notre Dame, this is the first time I've looked and said, oh, it's not about that one guy or those two guys. This is a good team defense in Notre Dame. But then there's the other side of the ball. And I went into round number two. I said it on Denton Day's show on Wednesday morning. I said it on BetMGM tonight when I was on last week. I've said it on this show last week going into round two. Round number two to me, I was going to stop thinking so much when I make my picks. Round one, I overthought it. And I do think, I asked this question, so you tell me if this is the case. I think a lot of us that were looking for upsets, maybe even picking upsets in the round one games, in the on-campus games, were we genuinely convinced that these big-time dogs, SMU and Indiana and all these other teams that got smoked, Tennessee that got smoked, do we really believe they have a chance? Or were we just trying to create a first round with some drama to justify a 12-team playoff?
Well, as far as the Tennessee game goes, I get why you thought that Tennessee was going to win because you saw what Ohio State did against Michigan.
Yeah.
So,
and I saw what Tennessee did to a lot of other teams.
Yeah, so I get why you picked that. Obviously, you were wrong, but I get why you picked that. Some of the other stuff, I mean, and I get also the complaints about the first round was boring. As you remember, I said chalk.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of these teams.
Even if you said chalk, though, it was four ass whoopings.
It was.
Did you see four straight up beatdowns, or did you just see four wins? Because if you'd have told me all four home teams are going to win, I'd have said that makes sense. I did not think all four teams were going to dominate.
I'm not going to do the well. You know, they need to pick the better teams and not the guys with the better records. Hey, the guys who won their championship, they deserve to be in. I mean, if they lost, they lost, but they deserve to be in. That's part of the rules. Yeah, I thought it was going to be like what it was.
Again, if you'd have told me...
And I thought Texas was... But yesterday, I thought Texas was going to boat race.
A lot of people... They were, what, 13.5 point favorites?
Yeah, I thought that was going to... And it looked like it was going to.
Yeah, for a minute. Again, that's why I said that Oregon touchdown to end the first half and to start the second half was really interesting. Because you're like, uh-oh, are we going to get back-to-back barn burners that look like they were over at the half? But if you'd have told me all four favorites were going to win in round one, I'd have said, okay, unsurprising. That, for the record, and I do think this is going to be true as long as we have first round on-campus games, I think overwhelmingly home teams are going to win the vast majority of round one games. Even if we go to 16 and everybody plays a first round game, if the top eight seeds all play at home, more often than not, six or more of the home teams are going to win. It's hard to win on the road against good football teams in college football. That's why we celebrate it when it happens. I'm not shocked by that. If you'd have told me all four games are going to be absolute beatdowns, I'd have been like, eh, no, somebody's going to make a case, right? Somebody's going to make a run. Nobody did. Now, as I said on the show earlier this week, I said it last week as well, that does not change the way I feel about the selection committee. I think the selection committee got it right, even though I will go one step further and say, those of you that are utilizing, say, South Carolina's loss to Illinois, we're going to talk about that coming up in a few minutes, 8 o'clock. Lulu Kesson of the Greenville News is going to join us, and we'll break down the Cheez-Its Bowl with her. For those of you who said, oh, is this the South Carolina team? That it's not the same team. It's not the same team. You're telling me without Rocket Sanders and Kyle Kennard, one of the best, the SEC's comeback player of the year and the best defender in the league, you're telling me that's the same team? You're telling me it wouldn't have been a different look if Kennard was out there? Of course it would have. It's not the same team. Oh, we're coming to the T-pose as well from Brett Bielema. I think there are some interesting things that have to be discussed, some interesting things that have to be talked about. But I don't think the playoffs were wrong. I don't think the seeding process was wrong. I don't think the 1-12 was wrong. I don't think any of it was bad or wrong. I think it's hard to win on the road against good teams. And the four teams that went on the road not only weren't as good, the four teams that went on the road We're also just outgunned by four teams that earned the right to play at home in round one. So, you know, I'm not upset about it because you turned around. You had a spectacular game between Texas and Arizona State. You had another beatdown, right? Is anybody going to make the argument? If you were saying that the teams who got in and got boat raced in round one shouldn't have been there, are you going to tell me the Oregon Ducks shouldn't have been there? Are you going to tell me the Ducks because they got burnt? No, of course you're not. Of course you're
By
not.
By the way, even the most ardent fan of Ohio State didn't see that kind of thing happen.
Nobody saw that coming.
I was happy with it, but I thought it was going to be a close game, and it was not.
Nobody saw that coming. And if nobody saw that coming, it makes sense that you just got to look and go, dude, it's the playoffs. Sometimes guys are going to get whooped. That's just how it goes. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more college football. We got Lulu Kessin at 8 o'clock to talk Cheez-Its Bowl. No Rashad Beard today. He's going to join us tomorrow. We do have Hayden Ask Mario at 9, Fight Club at 9:20. All coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's the Fan Upstate. We're going to talk about the Gamecocks bowl game coming up here in the next segment with Lulu Kessin of the Greenville News. Let's talk about what we have learned or are waiting to officially learn, I suppose, about the Clemson Tigers. Being reported by the Post and Courier that defensive coordinator Wes Goodwin is being removed from that position by the Clemson Tiger football program. Not unshocking to me, to be honest with you. Number one, all you need to do is to look at the numbers that have been posted by the Clemson defense before and after he took over as the defensive coordinator of this team. The Tigers' yards per rush has gotten worse year by year under Wes Goodwin. In the last season of Brent Venables, Clemson allowed 2.8 yards per carry. In Goodwin's first season, it went up by half a yard to 3.3, then 3.8 in his second season. This year, Clemson surrendered 4.7 yards per rush. Now, I'm bad at math, but if a team is averaging 4.7 yards per rush, that means they get three carries and they get a first down. Again, not great at math, but that's what it is. Then, I think that was exacerbated by the results of the playoffs. The Clemson Tigers allowed Texas in the opening round playoff game to rush for 292 yards. Texas against Arizona State ran for, what was it, 53? That's again, not good at numbers. Very big difference, 292 down to less than 55 yards. I go back to the game. A game that Clemson lost at home. A game that damn near cost Clemson a playoff spot. Louisville ran for 215 yards against Clemson in Death Valley. Clemson checked in with the 84th ranked defense nationally against the run. They allowed an average of 161 yards per game. Now, that might be one thing if you were paired it up with, like, say, a top two or three pass defense, but that wasn't elite either. Clemson's pass defense was ranked 58th in yards allowed per game, averaging nearly 214 yards per game. Every defensive metric got worse for Clemson, and it got worse year after year under Wes Goodwin. And I told you, if you were listening to the show on Monday and Tuesday, I told you why. It's because under Wes Goodwin, this defense, in my ever so humble opinion, played soft. Now, when I say soft, I do not mean they played soft in terms of mentality. I do not mean that they played soft in terms of their mindset, their desire to attack the football, whatever. What I mean by playing soft is they played a soft defense. I go back to the South Carolina game, which I think is the one where it kind of clicked for me that, oh, this is a problem. I go back to that South Carolina game, a game that Clemson, I don't want to say had in the bag because it stayed a 1 to 10 point game for the majority of the game. But a game that felt like was an inevitable Clemson win. And then we get to the fourth quarter. And then Lenore Seller starts doing Lenore Seller things. And it was the exact same vibe that Kevin Jennings and SMU had in the ACC title game. A game that they damn near won too. It got to a point where you have a quarterback who can move just a little bit. And instead of this team deciding that they are going to continue to be aggressive, that they are going to continue to attack, that they are going to continue to push the offense around a little bit, all of a sudden, Clemson's dropping back into a soft zone defense. They are not attacking the quarterback with more than four. And when you have a guy like a Lenore Sellers, when you have a guy like a Kevin Jennings, they're going to eat you alive with that. I'm not saying you got to blitz every play. I'm not saying you got to be off the cuff every single play. What I am saying is you've got to be comfortable taking a man out of coverage. You got to be comfortable at the very least putting a spy on somebody and saying, if this cat moves to the line of scrimmage, so do you. Your job is to hold him up enough for the cavalry to arrive. And I don't think Clemson did that at any point. You add into that the fact that you were giving up nearly 5 yards a carry on average, and you don't keep quarterbacks honest in the pocket. I don't know what you expect was going to be the case there. And there were some other stuff. I think there were some spots where I don't want to say Wes Goodwin was unaware of certain spots that you needed the best version of him. But if he was aware of it, he certainly did not play call like it, right? And I've heard this. This is not just my take. I have heard this from a handful of different Clemson fans, guys who cover the game. We'll ask John Blau about it when we roll back up in here on Monday at 8:40 when John Blau with the Post and Courier joins us. But I think that there were a number of spots throughout the year, but I think in the three games that were most pivotal, the South Carolina game, the ACC title game, and the playoff game against Texas, I think that there were spots where Clemson's defense basically became just kind of a soft zone. And that what that does is creates a world where you don't say you're going to have to do something special to beat us. That creates a spot where you just say you just got to play offense to beat us, right? Like we're going to allow you to have your best weapon. I go look at the Penn State defense in the first two games of the playoffs. I go back and I look at round number one against Indiana. Do you know what I saw? I saw a Penn State team that got after Kevin Roark and said, we're not going to let you be Kevin Roark. If you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us with a run game that we don't think that you have. And they attacked the quarterback, and they never got going, Indiana. And then I look at round two against Boise State, and what did Penn State do? Exactly what I said they were going to do. We are going to take Ashton Jante away from you. We're going to play on, if you'll allow me to borrow a hockey phrase, we're going to play on the forecheck. We're going to play on our toes. We're going to play downhill. We're going to play at you. We're going to take away those zone and those ISO runs that you guys love to use to spring number two. We are going to take that away from you, and we're going to attack you. And if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to do something spectacular. And Boise State could not arrange something spectacular to get it done. And when that became the case, all of a sudden, a Boise State team that, yes, in my opinion, deserved to be there. A running back in Ashton Jante that was a deserving Heisman Trophy finalist deserved to be there. All of a sudden, he was gone. I mean, yeah, he got 100 yards, but it took him 30 carries to do it. Ashton Jante was getting 100 yards and 10 carries all season long. Penn State said, yeah, we're not letting you do that. That's absolutely not happening. If you're going to beat us, and you might, you're going to beat us somewhere else. Clemson, I thought, did the exact opposite. I go back to the South Carolina game. We got Will in the live stream chat right now that said, Sellers breaking at least six sacks is one reason that game turned. Still need to be better against the run regardless. Think about the SC game. They should have just dared Sellers to throw. I agree. It's like Wes either sent everyone or just tried to hold on for dear life in a soft zone. Yes, that's it. And again, I'm not arguing that you send everybody. That's not it either. Because a guy like a Kevin Jennings, a guy like a Lenora Sellers, can still beat you with the arm. I'm not saying the answer is a zero dog, all out, all gap, jailbreak blitz. Not at all. What I'm saying is you play your defense, but you play it downhill. You play aggressive to the quarterback, but you say, we're not going to give you the easy passes. We're not going to sit back in a soft zone. We're not going to give you time, which is one thing that I think Jennings got in the second half of that game against Clemson in the ACC title game, something I thought Lenora Sellers got too much of in the South Carolina game in the fourth quarter. We're not going to give you time because you know what time does? Time allows wide receivers to get down the field, to see where the zone is, to find the soft spot, and to sit down in it. And it allows the quarterback time to watch his wide receivers get down the field, identify the zone, and sit down in it. And if that is the case, of course they're going to beat you. And if you drop an extra guy back to tighten up that zone at all, a guy like a Kevin Jennings, a guy like a Lenora Sellers is going to put the ball away and they're going to take off running. And that's what happened in both those games. There were too many spots, in my opinion, there were too many spots where the defense for Clemson just played soft. I don't want to say played scared. I don't want to say played poorly. They just played a legitimately soft defense. And I think it cost Wes Goodwin his job. Because on top of all of that, I don't necessarily know, and he's never going to say that this is the case. I don't necessarily know that Dabo Swinney needed a scapegoat. He won the ACC. He got into the college football playoffs. He got the floor waxed in round number one with his own backside, but he won the conference and he got back into the playoff. So I don't need that. I don't think Dabo needed a scapegoat, but I will tell you that it doesn't hurt you to have one in this spot. And so at a point in time where I've got Dabo Swinney, who already went outside of the program to bring in Garrett Riley, who already went outside of the program to make the offensive coordinator change, who has grabbed a couple of transfer portal players. We had John Blau on Monday's show. And I said, oh, you know, here's a guy that's, you know, why am I going Chris Collinsworth? Here's a guy that has not traditionally been a portal guy, and he's got two. And he said, well, Rob Brown, I do have to point out that these are the first two that he's gotten, not the first two he's offered. Clemson has made a number of offers to players in the portal, they just have been spurned by them. They just have not finished up and signed those cats. This is just the first time that Clemson's went after and got a guy out of the portal. And I think that's fair to the conversation. But it's also, even though they got these guys, I would make the point that this feels like a point where maybe Dabo Swinney is kind of waving the white flag on the Clemson way, the Dabo philosophy, right? This is one of his guys. Historically speaking, and I've been Clemson fans, if you feel that I'm stepping out of line here, let me know. But it has been traditionally a moment of hesitation for Dabo Swinney to let go of one of his guys, one of his Clemson guys that he elevated through the program. He's let two of them go now in the last couple of years. Both of his coordinators since the departures of Tony Elliott and Brent Venables to Virginia and Oklahoma, respectively. He's now let two coordinators go. He's now brought in a couple of portal guys. It feels to me like perhaps, and I could be wrong here, but it feels to me like perhaps Clemson fans are getting their way, and this is Dabo going, the college football sphere has changed, and it's time for me to change with it, or else we're going to continue to just rest in the middle of the pack. And you don't want to do that. The iron is cooling for the proverbial striking of it while it is hot. If you let it cool too much, how many times have I said, every day that you're not keeping up with Georgia, Georgia's getting further ahead of you. Every day you're not keeping up with Ohio State, they're getting further ahead of you. Every day you don't keep up with even 9-3 teams like Alabama and South Carolina, they are creating distance. It feels to me like, could be wrong, but I don't think I am. It feels to me like this is a point where Dabo's waving the white flag on the Dabo philosophy and moving into the modern era of college football. And respectfully, that's a good thing for Clemson. It really is. All right, we'll talk more about that. We got Lulu Kess into the Greenville News to talk South Carolina bowl game. When we come back, Rob Alonso and you on the Rob Brown Show here, ladies and gentlemen, is your favorite part of the show, Alonso Sports Flash.
As it should be, you're welcome. Three of the four spots in the college football playoff semifinals have been claimed, and the winner of today's Sugar Bowl will decide the last one. Texas escaped Arizona State in double overtime with a 39-31 win on the back of 322 yards and three touchdown passes from Quinn Ewers, outdueling Cam Scataboo's 143-yard, two-touchdown rushing day. It was pretty wild. The Ohio State University destroyed number one Oregon with a 41-21 win behind Will Howard's 319 yards, three touchdown day, including 187 and two touchdowns to Jeremiah Smith. Penn State is in after a 31-14 win over Boise State behind Catron Allen's 134 rushing yards. The Nittany Lions await the winner of today's Georgia versus Notre Dame matchup. Tune in this Saturday at 3:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the UNC Greensboro Spartans. It's Furman versus UNC Greensboro right here on the Fan Upstate.